Chapter 13. Of the way to resist the sensual impulses, and of the acts to be performed by the will, in order to acquire habits of virtue. 1. Whenever the reasonable will is attracted by the will of the flesh on one side, and by the divine will on the other, each contending for the mastery, it will be necessary to exercise yourself in many ways, in order that the divine will may in all things prevail within you. 1. Whenever you are assaulted and buffeted by the impulses of the lower nature, you must resist them manfully, so that the higher will may not consent. 2. When the assaults have ceased, excite them again, so as to have an opportunity of overcoming them with greater force and energy. Then challenge them again a third time, so as to accustom yourself to repulse them with scorn and horror. These 2 challenges to battle should be made in the case of every unruly appetite, with the exception of temptations of the flesh, of which we will treat in their place. Lastly, you should make acts contrary to each evil passion you have to resist. You will understand this the better by the following example. Suppose then you are attacked by feelings of impatience. Look well into yourself, and you will discover that the higher will is continually aimed at by these temptations in order to incline it to consent to them. At once, resort to the first thing which has been recommended. Use the higher will repeatedly in opposing these feelings. Resist them with all your might, that you may not be drawn to consent to them. Do not leave off the conflict till the enemy is, as it were, wearied out, dead, and yields himself vanquished. But, beloved, see the malice of the devil. When he perceives that we resolutely resist the rising of any passion, he not only refrains from stirring it, but when it is excited, he seeks to quiet it for the time, lest by the practice of resisting it, we should form the habit of the opposing virtue. And besides this, he would dexterously lead us to believe that we have, as brave soldiers, quickly trampled underfoot our enemies at one blow, so that he may entrap us with the snares of pride and vainglory. Therefore pass on from a first to a second encounter, by recalling to memory and exciting anew within you those thoughts which led to the temptation of impatience, until you are conscious of the feeling again. Then resist with a stronger will than before, and with greater force repress the feelings. And because, unless we thoroughly hate them, we are still in danger of being overcome by fresh attacks from our enemies, however successful we may have been in resisting them from a sense of duty and a desire to please God, you must face them a third time, and drive them far from you, not only with dislike, but with disdain, picturing them to yourself as worthy of hatred and abhorrence. Lastly, in order that the soul may be adorned and perfected with habits of virtue, you must often make inward acts which shall be directly opposed to your unruly passions. Thus, if you want to gain perfect patience, when you have received an affront which tempts to impatience, it will not be enough to exercise yourself in the 3 ways of fighting which I have already described. You must learn further to desire and love the slight you have received, wishing for a repetition of it, and from the same person, awaiting and disposing yourself to suffer still greater insults. These contrary acts are necessary for our perfection and holiness, because the above-named exercises of resistance, many and efficacious as they are not sufficient to pluck out the roots of sin. And therefore, to continue the same instance, although on receiving an insult we may not consent to the feelings of impatience, but fight against them in the 3 ways which have been recommended, yet unless we accustom ourselves by many and constant acts of the will to love contempt and rejoice in it, we shall never be free from the vice of impatience, springing as it does from a regard for our own reputation and a dread of contempt. And if the root of this sin be left alive, it will be sure to spring up afresh again and again until virtue is weakened and wholly choked by it. It will keep us in continual danger of a relapse upon every occasion. Therefore, without these contrary acts, the true habit of virtues can never be acquired. And keep in mind also that these acts must be so frequently made as to be sufficient to destroy the sinful habit. For this habit, having been formed by repeated acts of sin, can only be removed by repeated acts of the opposite virtue, and thus a counter habit of holiness be attained. Moreover, a greater number of good acts are required to form a habit of virtue than of evil acts to form a vicious habit, in that the former are not in alliance with our nature, which is corrupt, but the latter are always aided by it. Again, I would add to all that has been said that if the virtue you are striving to acquire need it, you must perform the outward acts in conformity with the inward, as, for example, speaking gently and lovingly, and, if possible, rendering services to those who have in any way vexed and thwarted you. And although these acts, both inward and outward, are done or seem to be done with such weakness of spirit as to make them appear to be a most unwilling service, yet you must on no account fail to do them, because, however weak they may be, they will keep you strong and secure in the battle, and make easy before you the path to victory. Stand on your guard and be self-controlled, so as to be ready to resist every assault of the passions, not only such as are hot and violent, but also the slightest and gentlest movement, for these latter open the way for the former, and thus habits of sin are afterwards generated in us. It comes to pass, from the little care men take to root out of their hearts lesser desires, that after having conquered the strongest cravings of the same passion, many, when they least expect it, have been assaulted and vanquished by their old enemies more completely and fatally than at first. Be mindful, too, sometimes, to mortify and check yourself in things which are lawful but not necessary, for from such a course of discipline, many good results will follow. You will in this way dispose yourself more and more for victory over self in other things. You will gain strength and skill to struggle against temptations. You will avoid manifold devices of the devil, and perform a work very pleasing to the Lord. Beloved, I speak plainly to you. If in the way which I have taught you, you will go on faithfully and constantly in these holy exercises for reforming and mastering yourself, then I promise you that you shall in a short time make much progress, and become really spiritual, and not in name only. But in no other way or course of discipline, however such may commend itself to you and be agreeable to your taste, yea, though it may seem to unite you in secret converse with your Lord, can I assure you that you will attain any real virtue or holiness. For this does not consist in, as I told you in the first chapter, neither does it spring from, exercises which are pleasant to us and which accord with our natural tastes, but it is the fruit of the crucifying of the flesh, with all its actions, and the renewing of man by the practice of the virtues of the gospel, and the uniting him to his crucified Creator. Depend upon it, that as habits of sin are produced by many and repeated acts of the higher will, yielding itself to the sensual appetite, so, on the other hand, habits of the virtues of the gospel are acquired by the performance of frequent and repeated acts of conformity to the divine will, as it calls us to the practice of different virtues from time to time. For as our will can never become vicious or earthly, however fiercely assaulted or allured by the lower nature, unless it inclines toward or consents to the temptations, so, on the other hand, our will, however forcibly drawn and assailed by inspirations and divine grace, will never become virtuous or be united to God, so long as by inward, and it may be outward acts, it does not suffer itself to be brought into conformity with his will. Chapter 14. What ought to be done when the higher will seems to be wholly overcome and stifled by the lower will, and by its enemies? If sometimes the higher will should seem to you powerless against the lower, and its other enemies, because you do not feel that your will is effectually set against them, yet stand firm and do not leave off fighting. For you must regard yourself as victorious until you can clearly see that you have given way. For since the higher will can act without the lower, so the higher can never be compelled by the lower to yield, however hot the assaults of the latter may be. God has, in truth, given to the will such liberty and such power that, if all the senses, all evil spirits, and all the world were to conspire together, and with their combined strength to assault and oppress it, the will could still, in spite of them, will or will not, whatever it liked with perfect freedom, and could assert itself when it liked, and as often as, for as long as, in what manner, and for whatever end, best pleased it. And if these enemies should ever attack you and press you with such violence as almost to stifle your will, so as to leave you, as it were, no breath to make an act of the will against them, yet do not lose courage, nor throw down your arms, but in such a case make use of your tongue and defend yourself by saying, I do not yield to you, I do not consent to you, after the manner of one who has been grasped and thrown to the ground by an enemy leaping upon him, and, when he is unable to thrust at him with the point of his sword, contrives to strike him with the hilt. And as he strives to spring backwards so as to wound his enemy with the point of the sword, so do you retire into the consideration of yourself, the knowledge that you are nothing, and that you can do nothing. Then, putting your trust in God who can do all things, strike a blow at the passion which attacks you, and say, Help me, O Lord, help me, my God, help me, Jesus, Mary's Son, that I may not yield to this. You may also, if the enemy gives you time for it, call in your understanding to aid your will, and by the use of various considerations, impart to the will fresh power and spirit against the enemy. Thus, for example, when you are in some persecution or trouble, and are so attacked by temptations to impatience that the will cannot, or at least will not, stand up against them, you will proceed to encourage it by considering some points such as the following. First, consider that if you have brought upon yourself the evil under which you are suffering, you deserve to bear it. For in such a case, every rule of justice requires you to bear patiently the punishment which you have yourself been the means of inflicting. Secondly, if you are not to blame in this particular matter, think that there are many faults which you have committed for which you have received no chastisement from God, nor have you punished yourself for them as you ought. And seeing that the divine mercy has changed the punishment of these faults, which should have been eternal, or at least should last for ages in another world, into this light affliction, ought you not to receive it willingly, or even thankfully? Thirdly, if the thought should come that the penance is a long one in comparison with the offense against the divine majesty, a thought which no one can ever lawfully indulge, you must remember that it is only through the strait gate of much tribulation that any can enter into the kingdom of heaven. Fourthly, think that were it possible to enter by an easier way, the law of love would not allow you to dream of doing so, seeing that the Son of God, with all his friends and his members, reached that kingdom by the road of thorns and crosses. Fifthly, the chief thought upon which your mind should dwell in this and in all other temptations is the will of your God, who, for the love he has for you, takes unspeakable delight in every act of holiness and mortification which you, as his faithful and devoted soldier, perform in return for his love to you. And be thoroughly convinced of this, that the more unreasonable in itself the trouble is, and the more shameful on account of the person from whom it comes, and therefore to you the more vexatious and difficult to be borne, so much the more pleasing will you be to the Lord, if, in things disordered in themselves and especially grievous to you, you can approve and love his divine will and providence, by which every event, however irregular it may seem to be, is disposed after a most perfect rule and order.